Our scripture reading this morning is found in two books. First being in Exodus, and the second in the book of Mark. The reading in Exodus is chapter 20, verses 8 to 11, and it's found on page 78 in your pew Bible. Remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And the second reading is from the book of Mark, starting at chapter 2, verses 23, and following through to chapter 3, verse 6. And that can be found on page 1065. One Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest, and he ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and also gave it to those who were with them. And he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.' Again he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, 'Come here.' And he said to them, 'Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?' But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. And he said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand.' He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him." May God add to the reading of his word this morning.
In 1845, the province of Canada passed this law for everyone in the province of Upper Canada, and it forbid all people to do or exercise any worldly labor, business, or work of one's ordinary calling, except for certain works of necessity or charity. Prior to 1900s, this was what went on a Sunday, a typical Sunday. A quiet Sunday was the social custom in Protestant Canada. If water had to be drawn or potatoes peeled for Sunday dinner, many made sure to do it on Saturday evening. Laundry was not hung out to dry on Sundays. Even the irreligious went to church on Sunday. The religious went more than once. And a great many Canadians spent the rest of the Sabbath reading religious books or periodicals. In 1874, that law began to be challenged, and it was challenged in the form of the city of Hamilton beginning to run their streetcars on Sunday. The challenges began to mount, and then in 1903, the British Privy Council in England struck down the law, declaring that it was not a matter or authority of provincial jurisdiction, but it was a matter of federal jurisdiction. So in 1903, very interestingly, the Protestant Church, the Catholic hierarchy, and the labor movement lobbied the federal government for legislation about work and Sunday. And the law that was passed in 1906 from the federal government of Canada was this, called the Lord's Day Act. Let me just find it here in my notes. Get my glasses off. There we go. I do have to get bifocals here. Okay. It was passed, and it prohibited sport, entertainment, and almost all businesses on Sunday. So any form of entertainment, any form of sport, any form of recreation. And in fact, as I researched this, I found in the Toronto Star that in those days, there was an article in the Toronto Star that was describing that it was illegal due to civil law of the country, you could not toboggan in the public parks on Sunday. You'd be fined. That went on until the 1960s. The federal government made an amendment. And the amendment was this, that they could have recreation on Sunday, that they could have horse racing on Sunday, that they could have trade shows and scientific expositions and cultural expositions on Sunday. That was in the 1960s. However, there was still no business. The stores and the businesses were all still closed. That did not happen and change until 1985, when and the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in favor of Big M Drug Mart, and the law called the Lord's Day Act was struck down from that was began in 1906. The fourth commandment, 6 days you shall labor, one day you shall rest. What do you do on that day or don't do on that day? Sunday as the Lord's Day, does it replace the Sabbath? Jesus, is he the fulfillment of the day of rest? And all these issues make the Sabbath an immense topic, far beyond in scope in which we can get into today. However, the text that was read to you by Mark from the Gospel of Mark thrusts us into the Sabbath controversy of the in the days of Jesus that centered around Jesus. And in order to look at this text, we need to back up a little bit and look at the Sabbath in a nutshell. The term itself just means to cease, to stop, to desist. That's what the term means. Of course, it is applied to ceasing or desisting in work. For the Israelites, God commanded them or gave them this command. You are familiar with it most often in the form that it was given in Exodus in the as the fourth commandment of the Ten Commandments. It's also found in Deuteronomy chapter 5 as well, in more or less the same format except for a change. And it's also elaborated a little bit in some other parts of Exodus, such as Exodus 31. But God gave this law, you shall work 6 days and rest one, for two reasons. The first is that he says it is the pattern of how he, God himself, worked in creating creation. So Exodus chapter 20, verse 11, that was read, refers back to, you shall do this because in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth, and he rested on the seventh. And so when you look back to Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 to 3, this is what we find. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So God created everything in 6 days, rested on the seventh, made that day special. He made it holy or separated it to himself. And as he is setting up the nation of Israel, as he's creating the nation of Israel out of these slaves he took out of Egypt, he's putting into the pattern of their nation, the pattern of their national life, of how they shall function as a nation. He says, I want you to have this pattern that I myself did. Work 6 days, 1 day off, 1 day of ceasing to work. And so he builds that into their national law, into the way in which they are to behave. God is not merely interested in continuous production. He's also interested in delight and enjoyment of what has been done or what has been produced. So he does not want the Israelites just to be producing and working all the time. He wants them also, like he did, to stop and to enjoy, to stop and delight in the results of what has been done. He wants them to experience what he did, delight or rest. The second reason for which God gave them this command is found in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So they are commanded to keep or observe the Sabbath day as a day of remembrance, as a day to take time to reflect that, oh, God rescued us, redeemed us from slavery in Egypt, where we had no rest, where it was nothing but forced labor. So as they observe the Sabbath, they remember that God has given them rest, that he is the one who made them and saved them and rescued them. It was God who is unlike Pharaoh. Pharaoh was a taskmaster, a tyrannical taskmaster, who just simply forced them to work all the time. But God, oh no, he's not like that. So as he sets up the nation of Israel, he says, I want you to have a day of rest, a regular day where you cease from your work and you enjoy things. So by observing the Sabbath, the Jews would then express tangible knowledge of two things. As they observed the Sabbath, first of all, they were showing that they acknowledged God as the divine king, because it's a form of obedience. Oh, he's the king. He says, take a day of rest. So as they observe that, they're acknowledging the lordship of God over them. But as they observe it, they're acknowledging him as king, as Lord, because they're doing the pattern God has given to them. They are acting like God, working 6 days, resting one. So they acknowledge that he is the Lord, he is the king. We will do what the king does. We will act like the king. Second, they acknowledge the truth of their dependence upon God. So as they stop and observe the Sabbath, they're reflecting upon, well, how did we get to be a nation anyway? Why do we get a rest anyway? It's because God rescued us, and he's given this day to us as a gift. He's given this pattern of 6 days work, 1 day off, as a pattern for us to delight and to rest. So they recognize that they didn't get or make this day for themselves. It wasn't their idea. It wasn't by their ability that they became a nation and decided that they would set up a weekly day off. This was God's doing. He did it for them. They are dependent upon him. So they acknowledge by observing the Sabbath that the gift of rest and freedom came from God. So then as we go on into Exodus 31, the Sabbath, as they observe it, becomes a sign of the covenant. And it shows, as a sign of the covenant, that they are his people and he is their God. Therefore, when someone did not keep the Sabbath, it wasn't just a mere breaking of a law. It wasn't just, oh, well, the guy's got too much energy and, you know, he's just working it off or whatever. It wasn't something so inconsequential as that. It wasn't just a breaking of a law. It was a real thumbing of the nose at God, at the covenant. Because as they broke the Sabbath, they were essentially saying, I'm not acknowledging the king. As they broke the Sabbath, they're saying, I'm not acknowledging that I have a gift given to me from God. I don't need to be dependent on him. I can do what I please. So it is a rejection of God's lordship and dependence by breaking the Sabbath in the case of an Israelite. So with that bit of background, when we look at Mark chapter 2 and when Jesus says, the Sabbath was made for man and not the man made for the Sabbath, we can then understand, oh, really, that law was not meant to be something that bound people and was crushing people and a legalistic form that sucked all the joy out of a day. That was not God's intention for that law for Israel. His intention in giving them that law was, I want them to benefit, to be delighted, to have rest, to be restored. I want them to be like me and experience what I did, to experience delight in what was done. I want them to have a day of freedom. I don't want them to work like slaves. I want them to have a time where it is they are free from their work, free from endless production and slavery. So we see by looking at those two reasons why God asked or commanded them to observe the Sabbath, he wasn't giving them a command that was going to bind them and crush them and make life miserable. It was a command that was going to actually free them up into for an enjoyment of life. Yet, that said, we must not think the Sabbath as a day where it is just a holiday for them to do whatever they please. Because the other emphasis we find in the teaching on the Sabbath in Exodus and in Deuteronomy and in Leviticus is that it is a day to the Lord. So as it says in Exodus 20, verse 10, the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. See, that's what really made it different than the other six, that it was holy, set apart to God. So there was to be on that day an acknowledgement of God, that the reason why they even had that day was because of God. So there was a definite connection and relationship and honor and worship that was to go towards God on that day. It wasn't just a day to go to the amusement park and do whatever they please. Yes, it was a day of ceasing. It was a day of rest. It was a day of delight, but it was also a day where God had a key part in that day. So those were the two principles to be expressed in the Sabbath observance, that it was to the Lord, the one in whom they depend upon, the one who is their king. And it was a day of delight, a day of rest, a day of doing something different than you had to do or were forced to do the rest of the 6 days. So with that background, now we can come into Mark chapter 2. And as you see there, Jesus is walking through the grain fields with his disciples, and they're picking some grain, and they're, as the parallel account in Luke chapter 6, verse 1 says, they're rubbing it, and then they're just eating the kernels. Now, first of all, we might think from our modern mindset that, well, the real issue here is they're stealing food from some other farmer. It's not their grain field. Well, they're not stealing. That's not the case or question at all. If you were to look at Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 24 and 25, the Mosaic law allowed travelers, as they went by a field or a vineyard, that as they went by to nourish themselves or give themselves a little refreshment, they could pick a few grapes or a few grain heads and eat it as they went on. I think it does state that they could not pick it and put it in a bag, you know, in a basket as they went on. No, that's stealing. But to just help yourself a little bit as you keep walking, that was fine. That was allowed. That's not stealing. So the Pharisees, their problem here is that they look at the disciples and what they're doing, and in their interpretation of the Sabbath day laws and in their traditions, they're saying, your disciples are working. You're breaking the fourth commandment because you are reaping. You are harvesting. You're threshing, sorting the chaff from the grain. And that's work in our books. And you can't do that on the Saturday. It's not allowed. Jesus replies. But what is interesting is he does not reply in the way that we might. We might argue with the Pharisees. Ugh, give it a rest, guys. It's not really harvesting. They're not really working. And it's true. In the Old Testament, in Exodus, it states that during the time of harvest, harvest was to cease on the Sabbath. No, even though the harvest was needed to be brought in, you didn't bring it in on the Sabbath. You rested. It says that in Exodus. And so we might argue from that perspective that they're not harvesting. They're just walking by and grabbing a few things to just give them a little snack. That's all they're doing, making a snack. It's not harvesting the field, guys. And so we might debate them that way. But Jesus doesn't do that at all. He goes off and he gives them three other responses. First, he gives an example from 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 1 to 6, where a precedent is set that human need overrules the legal observation of a law. So in this particular case, David, who was not yet king, is being threatened by King Saul, who wants to murder him. So David is fleeing from King Saul. He has to flee quickly. He hasn't been able to get supplies. So he goes to the tabernacle and says, I need some help. What provisions have you got for me and my men? The priest says, well, all we got is the holy bread, so to speak. The bread that they put on the table in front of God's presence in the tabernacle. They put 12 loaves there every week, and they are to be changed every Sabbath. He says, that's all we got. We don't have any other regular food. See, the problem was, as Leviticus says, those loaves could only be eaten by the priests. Those loaves could not be eaten by anybody else who was not a priest. So it would be wrong, breaking the law of God, for David to eat them or for his men to eat them. But the priest says, well, you can have them anyway. And David takes them and gives them to his men, and they eat. And nowhere in the account in Samuel or anywhere else is David and his men or the priests condemned for eating that. Jesus himself does not condemn the priests or David. The precedent that he's saying is that in this case, there was a need, and the law did not need to be followed in that particular case. Maybe a modern example would suffice to illustrate it. So you have a husband who's taking his pregnant wife to the hospital who is in labor. And so he's speeding to get to the hospital. The police stop him. Now, as the police, if they're any worthy of that name, they're probably not going to stand there and insist on giving the man a ticket. I don't care if your wife's in labor. You broke the law. You're doing 100 instead of 80. You know, it'd be ridiculous. You know what's going to happen? The policeman's going to say, okay, I'll give you an escort to the hospital. You see, the need causes the law to be set aside. Same type of dynamic here. So that's the first part of Jesus' answer. The second part is he says the Sabbath was made for man. And I've already explained that from looking at the two places where it is recorded as the fourth commandment in Exodus and Deuteronomy. It truly was made for humans. It was made for Israel to bless them and to enable them to have a delight and a rest. That law was not given to harm a person or to cause them to be in bondage. And then thirdly, Jesus says, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I decide what is right or wrong for the disciples to do on the Sabbath. And I say that they're picking this grain and eating it is not wrong. They're fine to take it and to have a snack and take away the edge of their hunger and to refresh themselves. Now that's very significant. We need to pay attention to what is implied there as he says, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. First of all, he's implying that how the Pharisees understand the Sabbath and all their traditions about the Sabbath are misunderstandings, misapplications of the law. So he's saying, what you guys think about the Sabbath and how you decide what is work and what is not work on the Sabbath, I'm just going to set all that aside. I'll tell you what is lawful or not lawful, because I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. And the second implication that comes out of him using this title is he's making himself equal with God. Remember, who gave the Sabbath? God gave the Sabbath law to the Israelites. And on what basis did he give it to them? As we saw in Exodus, he gave it to them on the basis when he and how he acted when he created the universe. This is God who created the universe, God who gave the law to the Israelites, and Jesus has the audacity to say, oh, I'm the boss of the Sabbath. I'll tell you what's right and what's wrong. He's making himself equal with God. So the Pharisees had a Sabbath day question for Jesus. As you move into chapter 3 on a different occasion, or as they go into the synagogue, Jesus has a Sabbath day question for the Pharisees. The Pharisees, as the text says, are looking for a reason to accuse Jesus of doing wrong, and they actually want to know if Jesus is going to heal on this day. Among the general populace of the Israelites, they knew it was wrong to heal on the Sabbath day. They knew it was wrong to do work to bring about a healing. If you would reflect for a moment back on Mark chapter 1, verse 32, when Jesus began his ministry, there's something important there to notice, that the people waited until the Sabbath was over until they came to Jesus for healing. So it says when the Sabbath was over that evening, then they brought the sick to Jesus and the demonized to Jesus, and he healed them. In the Pharisaic laws and in their teachings, they actually specifically forbid the setting of a broken bone on the Sabbath. Oh, it's the Sabbath. You can't do the work to fix that broken bone. You're going to have to wait till the next day. They specifically forbid straightening of a deformed body. So their rule was, if you have to work to heal, you can't heal on the Sabbath. The only time they allowed an exception to that was if someone was imminently close to death. Then you could do something. Otherwise, I'm sorry, you got to wait in pain till the next day. Jesus here in this text purposely picks out a man with a withered arm. What withered arm means and what kind of state it was, I don't know. But it wasn't, it would no doubt be bothersome, probably some kind of handicap, but it's definitely not life-threatening. And Jesus asks the Pharisees, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to kill? In reference to this man that he asked to stand up in their presence. That Jesus heals the man, James Edward notes, and I quote, "It is not simply permissible to heal on the Sabbath, but right to heal on the Sabbath," end of quote. So in Jesus' action, as he healed this man, he was stating, showing to all, it's right to heal. It's good. This is what good does or looks like on the Sabbath, that you should do on the Sabbath. The Sabbath was intended by God to be a gift to humanity and a source of good in the Israelites' life. So if there is a human need, Jesus is saying, I expect you to do the work that is necessary to bring about the good in those persons' life. Even if it's on the Sabbath, do the work of mercy, do the work of love to meet that need, just as he did. You see, the Pharisees had turned the Sabbath into a day of legalism where human need went unmet, where people had to suffer on the Sabbath and people had to have their needs unmet. Doing good by assisting those in need was forbidden, according to the Pharisees. So this makes Jesus very angry, as it says in verse 5. Now the response of the Pharisees in verse 6 is that they go off with the Herodians, the people who hung around with King Herod and were his inner circle and supporters, and they begin to plot, how do we get rid of this guy? How do we kill him? So on the Sabbath, in response to the second part of Jesus' questions, the second part of Jesus' question was, should you save a life on the Sabbath or should you kill? They start to begin to plot on the Sabbath how to kill, how to conspire to take Jesus' life. Now, contextually, we need to realize that this response of them to kill Jesus is not just the response to this point of where he, or this episode where he is, where he has healed the man with the withered hand. That in and of itself is not the sole thing that brought them to this decision to attempt to kill Jesus. Actually, this is the fifth episode of a number of things that have been going on in since Mark chapter 1. This is the climactic response, so to speak. So if we review that quickly, you remember that in the beginning of Mark, Jesus is pronouncing a man's sin forgiven. He's doing and proclaiming to be equal to God. I can forgive sin as God does. He touches a leper, an unclean person. And thus in the Pharisees' eyes, he's unclean. He eats with sinners. People who the Pharisees think God has rejected. So again, Jesus is unclean. And then he's healing, he's breaking the Sabbath, he supports his disciples when they do work according to the Pharisees' definition on the Sabbath, and again, makes himself equal with God. And in doing all that, he's also overturning and throwing out their traditions. So this statement that they go out to plot to kill Jesus, this is the climax. This is it. They've had enough. This has been building for a bit of a time. In their eyes, Jesus is merely a man worthy of death. And if they were right, Jesus would be worthy of death. If Jesus was just a man, to claim to forgive sins, yes, that would be blasphemy. To claim to be the Lord of the Sabbath, that would be blasphemy. But their eyes were shut, their ears were hardened, closed to the truth that this was God in the flesh walking around. As you go this morning, I'd like you to reflect upon your attitude towards Sunday, or a day of rest. A number of us did grow up with the blue laws, the laws where in our civil society we were not allowed to work on Sunday. And so I'm just past where I was born, just past when they changed the law in the 60s to allow entertainment on Sunday and things like that. So I don't remember those days because I wasn't there. But I've had uncles and others tell me that, yes, you know, they couldn't even read the comics on Sunday because that was fun and it wasn't religious literature. And so as I think about that civic law and also the Protestant traditions of Sunday from the 18 to the 1900s, I wonder if it has caused us to have an understanding or a view towards the Sabbath or Sunday or a day of rest that is primarily negative, where we think, oh, Sunday, it's a day of restriction. It's a day of don't do this, have no fun. You can't work, but you can't play either. You can't have delight. You can't have joy. Yes, my family, we went to the beach on Sunday. We had family picnics on Sunday. We had fun on Sunday. But still, even I had that mindset as I looked into this. I go, you know, really, that's influenced me in the past, that still Sunday was a day of really not to be one of joy, one of delight, one of rest. And what I've learned from this and what has struck me that is trying to shape and change my perspective is that really it was given as a day of delight, a day of rest, and a day of worship. Those three things do and can go together. I think because of our society and the way Sunday was treated and legislated, we think those things don't go together. So I just want you to think through, how have you been influenced in your attitudes towards Sunday? In the traditions we've grown up with the laws that we had grown up with? Because the original intention given to the Israelites was it was supposed to be a day of joy. Is this day of rest a day of joy for us? Now, there still is the question. Are we meant to keep the Sabbath? Are we supposed to keep a six-day work, one-day off cycle as Christians today in the church under the new covenant? Is Sunday just a changing of the Sabbath from what we call Saturday to Sunday? Is that what Sunday is all about? Is it just the switching of the days? But we're still supposed to, you know, no work and all that kind of stuff? Well, ask that question 45 years ago, probably most people would say, yes, Sunday is just movement of the Sabbath one day. But is that true? Or isn't it? Ask that same question today to the generations born after 1985. Is Sunday a Sabbath? You're just going to get blank stares. They don't know what you're talking about. Now, in our 24/7 society, Sunday isn't set apart at all. It's just another ordinary day. Even among Christians, oh, you go to church on Sunday for an hour and a half or 2 hours. But then your rest of the day is just filled up like every other day of the week. There's really not much unique on Sunday about it, other than you spend 2 hours in your busy schedule in a worship service. So truly, I think we have to look at this whole question again. We need to look at this issue. What is a Sabbath? Is the Lord's Day or the Sunday the same thing, or is it something different? Are we required to obey this fourth commandment or not? And what does it mean to rest? that's for next week. Ask the worship team to come forward.